Okay, thank you, Robin. My name is Jeff Fagger. I'm from Newcastle University School of Architecture, Planning and Landscape. I'm going to talk about a fairly old paper today. I'm on sabbatical at the moment, and I was hoping to have progressed some research on transport and the media a bit further than I have, but inevitably I haven't. You know, anyone who's been on sabbatical knows it takes a couple of months to kind of for the university to get its claws out of you so you can get on with some more interesting things. So some of you may have seen this paper, some of you may not, but hopefully what it might do is just set some of the context for thinking about methods and also thinking about issues. It certainly hopefully will set something up a bit for this afternoon's session on methods, I hope, today and so also tomorrow. So as Robin mentioned, this is a paper actually about a particular case. It was published in Transport Policy in 2011, and it's about the Manchester TIF bid, which most people will know, and part of the story is about the congestion charging proposals for Manchester and all the rest of the stuff. And it's really a story, I guess, about how the media foregrounds certain issues, and then that may or may not shape the way that the issue is debated in other public arenas. So, just to start off, I mean, this is well known to everybody, I guess, but my sort of starting points is that things like travel demand are a social and cultural construct, and they're a response to a range of factors that sort of broadly cast you can think of as constituting an opportunity structure. So, underpinning that, I guess, is the idea that interrelated trends suggest that an increasing recognition of attention to media portrayal of policy issues might be significant in shaping travel demand. You know, we know travel demand doesn't just kind of land on us from heaven. It is actively shaped. And clearly public discourse is something that will actively shape, you know, how demand will eventually sort of manifest itself. So three things, really, but it could be others. The significance of the behaviour change agenda, you know, the whole idea that behaviours are, you know, are perhaps more readily changed than we thought they were, both in the short and the long term. Linked to that, evidence of the potential of kind of soft measures. Gone a bit quiet on that under the coalition government, but, you know, it's still going on more at a grassroots level. And I guess thirdly, the sort of shift from a sort of expert-led planning agenda more to some more sort of co-produced kind of agenda for transport policy. I think all of those things are sort of in the background a bit. So what might the media's roles in relation to transport as a sort of public policy agenda? Well, perhaps we could think about two things. Firstly, the media sets and perpetuates wider news agenda, and it provides basic information. So at the first level, it provides information about events, and obviously those events are themselves those that the media deems newsworthy in the context of this wider agenda. So we were sort of chatting over lunch about now you see cycling in the media a lot more than you would have done before, so this is something that now is deemed newsworthy where it wasn't previously. But the media then sets and perpetuates wider news agendas. So I would argue transport is perhaps now linked in the public mind to climate change in a way that it wasn't 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's starting to become linked to public health and obesity in a way that it wasn't 10 or 15 years ago. But I would also argue that it gets stuck. It also frames issues in particular ways that it's comfortable with and historically thinks will resonate with its news publics, if you like. And I'll talk about that in terms of the sort of familiar repertoires that the media tends to use. And I'm going to fixate on one particular thing. So what is newsworthy? Well, those of you who come from a sort of more cultural studies background will know that this is a debate about, you know, as old as time, really, in media studies. And people often sort of come down to the idea that there is a sort of primary and secondary sets of issues, really. But broadly speaking, for our purposes perhaps, what is newsworthy, three things tend to sort of stand out and be common to various analyses of news media. The first is that the media likes stories that have a personal axis. So even where there's a bigger agenda in play, they kind of like to personalise it. You know, the farmer whose livelihood has been taken away by climate change, the person who's been a victim of a road crash, that kind of thing. As an illustrator of a wider agenda. Linked to that, dramatisation is often key. So, you know, the act of the crash or the act of the crop being taken away, and often that's about emphasising a crisis. Now, sometimes that doesn't really help anyone who's trying to promote a particular, sustainable mobility agenda. But we can come back to that perhaps. And the third thing is novelty. So they're not particularly interested in things just in the flow of events. And again, that has particular resonances and difficulties for transport campaigners, perhaps. So I suppose my question really, and it is a question, is that, because I'm not much of a campaigner, but campaigners would be interesting for their perspective on this, is that there's a potential disconnect sometimes with those three things to some of the things that people who are interested in promoting sustainable mobility might wish to see. But we'll think about that later, perhaps. I thought before I talked about the case study as well, it might be worth just raising some issues, which again will be very familiar to people who are from a sort of media studies discipline, but it might be worth just for those who aren't to think about what the sort of trends in media production are, and because I think that's important if people want to get their messages across in the media. So the first thing really is about whether there is a decline in the resources available for reporting, and this has particularly been debated around newsprint. So there is a contestation about that. Some people argue that there's as many kind of people with a NUJ membership card, National Union of Journalists membership card, than there were 20 years ago, 40 years ago. But I think the general feeling is that there has been a decline in the resources available to report issues. And of perhaps a particular relevance to this audience is the notion that there's a decline in both sort of specialist correspondents. You know, so used to have a transport correspondent. Thinking 25 years ago, I think Christian Wolmar was the Independent's transport correspondent, and there'd be something in the Independent every day from him, and it wouldn't necessarily reflect some of those newsworthy things that we talked about before. And also regional correspondents. So those of us who live in the north might find that there was a recent debate in The Guardian recently about the northeast being portrayed in a particular way, and it sort of emerged through that, you know, there was one person basically covering everything north of Birmingham. So if you want to get a kind of a transport agenda that has particular resonance to a northern region or a northern city, then you can see that might be rather hard to get that into particular news outlets. Against that, I suppose, we have a sort of rise in social media and a plurality of sort of platforms and sources now. So people, you know, are not necessarily going to get their news from traditional sources anyway. And certainly if you talk to people like Edmund King, he'll say that he considers social media now to be more important than virtually all mainstream media, bar the sort of, you know, 8-10 slot in the Today programme. So we have to think about that in our analyses as well as in our thinking. And the final point I would say, which relates a little bit to the regional issue, is that local news, which is historically a very good source of information and perhaps a place where, as academics and activists, we could get a public debate going around transport, is perhaps a diminished source now. There's this whole issue about churnalism, about the fact that local media is very hollowed out. The once where there were, you know, hundreds of reporters on a city newspaper, it's now tens, and they're basically, you know, instead of working on one or two stories a day, they're typically working on 10. And what that fundamentally means in practice is dropping a press release into a space, rather than actually going out and saying, okay, the CBI tell us we need this road proposal, let's go and get some contrasting views. There isn't time to do that, so the press release tends to get just dropped into the space. So that, as I'll argue at the end, creates an opportunity if you want to get your press release dropped into a space, but it also means that you have to be very aware of what's going on. So to the case, really. Well, I very quickly tell you a little bit about a case study that I reported on in Transport Policy Journal. This was a case that I did with two postgraduate students around the Greater Manchester TIF bid, which in 2008, if you remember, was a proposal to implement a series of public transport improvements amounting to about £2.7 billion across Greater Manchester. And that would be funded up front by central government, but would require, toward the end of that period, the implementation of a congestion charge for Greater Manchester. So we were interested really in just the way that that proposal, which was quite a complicated and complex proposal, was reported in the media. So what we did is use the database LexisNexis, which analyses all British print media, for a six-week period in the run-up to and straight after the Manchester referendum. You probably can't see that, but basically in the top left is a sort of map of some of the improvements that were going to be funded out of this. And the bottom right is the cordon pricing scheme that was also part of it. And we had a sort of two-stage approach to what we were doing, basically based around content analysis. Well, a lot of media research tries to unite looking at the producers of media and the receivers of media. An awful lot of it sticks in the middle and just looks at the media itself, and that's what we did. And we used a sort of quantitative and a qualitative approach. So the quantitative approach basically was just counting the number of articles that were referring to the bid. And the qualitative element was then trying to look at, you know, in what ways were they being referred to. So we used a variety of search terms which were familiar to anyone in here who's done this kind of project. And then more qualitatively, we used a sort of fairly simplistic discourse analysis, really, to sort articles based on the tone and framing of their headlines, and also the tone and framing of the article text itself. Now, again, anyone who's done this will know that it's difficult, because quite often a newspaper article will flip in the middle. So it'll lead with some kind of very sort of scaremongery headline and opening paragraph, and then slowly unravel and tell you that actually what it said at the beginning is untrue. But anyway, that's kind of the way that it works. And we also specifically focused on quotes in articles as well, and we analysed those according to their tone, whether they were positive, negative, or neutral. So these were our chosen sources. We looked at six national newspapers, one local newspaper, which was the Manchester Evening News. And I should say the Manchester Evening News is a newspaper that still actually has a lot of merit and a good sort of sense of... it has some good journalism in it, really, which is probably unusual in a British context, I would argue, these days, for a local newspaper. And we also looked at the BBC Online as a sort of something of a sop, really, to the idea that we knew we needed to look at social media, but it was actually rather hard and time-consuming. Actually, what we found by doing that is that the BBC Online website was a potentially very significant source of information in terms of the sheer number of articles it published on this, given that it was something of primarily interest to Greater Manchester, but also, you know, there were wider issues about the way that this proposal would play out and whether other cities would take it on board. But that's broadly what we found. We looked at the timing of the articles, and we found that most of the articles were actually published after the referendum, which sort of reflects those newsworthy things about novelty, if you like. So if you were looking for the British national news media to give you the facts, if you like, on the Manchester TIF bid, you would have to look pretty hard, because there wasn't much reporting of it for the actual vote itself. We looked at the tone of the headlines, and we broadly found that most of them were neutral, but there were very many more negative headlines than positive headlines. It was generally about the congestion charging element. It was generally about it being a tax. It was very hard to unhitch the media. Campaigners involved with it seem to suggest it's very hard to unhitch the media away from the idea of the charge being the central element. We looked at the way the article text was framed, and most of it, again, was framed in terms of charging. The big 54% blob there is all about references in the article text to congestion and charging. So what do we broadly conclude? Well, four things, really. We felt that many dimensions of the TIFF bid were underexplained. There was a lot of material created by the team promoting it. But even newspaper articles that argued for the bid rarely detailed the transport improvements. It was all fixated on what people thought about the charge, a lot of vox pop, that kind of thing. So the core of the public debate centred on the charging element and fixed particularly on the word congestion. So you had these kind of two negatives, if you like, floating about, congestion and charging. And I think congestion reflects a sort of wider public discourse, and charging perhaps reflect the newsworthy element, that something that was previously free you would now have to pay £2 or £3 for. So the bid became known as a congestion charging proposal, and media representations were part of this. And the way articles were constructed was important too. Headlines in particular emphasised the charge, and the text was actually ordered such that the charge was up front, and then, oh yes, and then there's these public transport benefits, which was the reverse to how it was actually going to be implemented. And it also made the sort of public transport element, it reinforced the idea that it was a bribe or a sweetener to the Manchester public. So, four conclusions perhaps for discussion. From albeit one small case study, the feeling is that the media repertoire is pretty narrow with respect to transport in many ways. The word congestion is the sort of comfortable thing for journalists to latch onto. It's something that they think will resonate in the public mind. It's a bit of an empty signifier. We know that congestion, you know, means different things to different people at different times. You know, congestion in central London is a very different thing from congestion in central Lancaster. And in a way, it's a bit of an empty signifier, I think. But it is something that journalists feel very happy to use, and I think it reinforces in the public mind that the big problem or the big issue for transport policy to tackle is congestion. The second thing is that, pessimistically, that feels unlikely to change in an era of churnalism. But optimistically, perhaps, if we upskill our professionals a little bit better with respect to the realities of media production, that might be helpful too. So knowing that, essentially, the local media will just churn your press release is actually quite helpful if you can kind of establish a relationship with them and get your press releases planted in local media sources. And two final points, really. I wonder whether a greater engagement, really, earlier on in the process with elements of the media might have helped in our Manchester case. There was a considerable kind of PR push, but there could be lessons to be learnt there about how you kind of engage with the media if you are, an activist group or a policymaker, and try and shift those representations early and try and challenge some of those kind of rather lazy kind of resorts to words like congestion. And so I suppose in the future what I'm trying to do is look a bit more about the production side of things and also the receipt. So, you know, how do the public receive the transport stories that are given to them? You know, why do journalists hitch on certain issues more than others in the transport field, and how do they choose to frame them? And hopefully that will understand a little bit about why implementing certain parts of the sustainable mobility agenda can prove rather difficult. Okay, thank you, Robin. Sorry, I overran.
No problem. So, round of applause there. What I propose is two questions, opening it up, and then really want to emphasise, if you do have questions and you don't get to answer it, ask it now. Do write it down and bring it into the main debate towards the end. So who wants to kick us off? Questions for Jenna? Yes, please. Andrew Evans?
I'm Andrew Evans. You use LexisNexis for researching for data. Can I ask whether you used forward, whether, and your findings were all basically print media plus the BBC.
Yeah.
Did you find anything out from news agencies? They're major sources.
Yeah, no, not in this work. I've done a little bit of other work where we find news agencies to be very important. But no, actually, that might be a missing element.
Nexus a lot.
Yeah.
And what I search for, the news agencies are the most valuable source.
Yeah. Well, you often then find the news agency copy, obviously,
you do.
Popping up. So I can imagine that if we'd done that, you'd find the various newspapers scattered across Manchester would be probably using the news agency wire, yeah.
Tom?
Tom Kern, UCL Transport Institute. One question and one clarification. The question is about the fact that the media tended to portray congestion charging in a negative light, and wondering whether it is impossible to answer the question of whether that was driven by an existing negative perception amongst citizenry, or whether the one happened at the same time as the other, I suppose. Clarification is about Edmund King, and whether if he believes social media is important, more important than everything apart from the paper.
He said at a seminar recently that he felt that it was more important to get your message across on social media than it was through traditional print media, and he felt that in a sense that plurality almost means that. The one thing he mentioned that was different was the sort of Today program 8:10 thing, where he still feels that's where politicians count. But everyone is getting their media from so many different places now. I think he felt that really, a Twitter feed was probably more important than talking to the, transport correspondent or the Guardian or whatever. I was interested too.
Mm-hmm. And my previous question about whether it's possible to say which came first, opposition or newspaper?
I don't know, others might have a better view on that, but it's the sort of shaping or reflecting problem, I suppose, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, I think I think the general consensus on the sort of Manchester case is that it probably wouldn't have made very much difference how the media reported it, but I don't know, really. I don't know how sensitive print media in particular is to their readership and whether they're just reflecting what their readers, want to read or would like to see, or whether they are being a little bit more, prepared to be a bit more challenging and to try and lead public opinion. I wouldn't really know about that, but I think that's why it would be more interesting to get in and talk to them.